Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
Well, we are right in the middle of our series called Well-Rounded. And the big idea is that I think you're here, most of you are here maybe for the free coffee, but also maybe because you like want to grow and thrive and flourish in your spirituality. And a word we use often is like we want to be a Jesus-looking community. Jesus-looking like man, a Jesus-looking woman, Jesus-looking church, community. That's like what we want. But like, how do you know if you like are one? Like you just kind of go and say, I hope it's working, right? And like, and maybe you actually look like white Jesus, right? And so like maybe you got like the beautiful hair and the killer sandals and a white robe, and you're like, I think I did it. I have arrived. That's one way of being Jesus-looking, but there's also, hey, sidetrack. Do you know that there's actors who dress like Jesus so you can get like your wedding photos with Jesus? Your engagement photos with Jesus. That's a real thing. Okay, I am just sidetracked. So, why am I talking about this? Oh, so how do you know if you're actually, if you are Jesus looking? What kind of things should you be doing? What kind of things should be happening in your life and through your life? Jordan Sundberg gave a great message last week on generosity. My brother, Dano, I love saying his name, right? He gave one on sacrificial service, and then I did one on something, I don't remember, but here, today, all right? And today we're talking about the nudge. And I know, you're like, oh, clearly if you're a Jesus-looking person, it's all about the nudge, right? You're like, oh, this is going to be a great message. I really am tracking with you. But here's how I want to start, all right, for the nudge. It's Paul. Paul in Ephesians chapter 1, 15 and 16 says this. That's why, when I heard of the solid trust you have in the Master Jesus and your outpouring of love to all the followers of Jesus, I just couldn't stop thanking God for you. Every time I prayed, I'd think of you and give thanks. I've never heard those words used at me before, right? This is like a very endearing, like it's just soaking with love for these people. Of like, every time I think of you, I don't even want to think about you, but I do think about you, and then I thank God for you. And every time I thank God for you, I think about you again. And so I have to like thank him again, and then I think about you. It's just like this conveyor belt of thanking you over. It's just so amazing. It's just like, Paul in his letters starts off a lot of his letters like over and over and over again, just like pouring on like the love sauce on all these people. Usually what I get is, hey, Chris, I was thinking about you because yesterday I saw a guy with these like really ugly pants and he tried telling a joke and it did not go anywhere. And so I thought about you. That's usually how something like that goes, right? Or like, hey, I drove through Carlton. It smells funny. Thought about you. That's right? Like this is just over the top. I actually wouldn't mind being in a community like that, right? I wouldn't mind like walking the room and they're just like, thank God for you, Chris. We think about you all the time. Right? I'd walk around like, huh, yeah, I'm pretty good. I'm not too shabby, right? So like, how do you actually get a community like this then? Because I think if we even toned it down, some of you are like, I don't want to be a part of that kind of community at all, right? Just let me be in the corner alone. So, but how do you like move towards a healthy community like this where you can be honest, where you can actually genuinely say, I'm really glad that you're here, because it feels really good to be noticed. It feels super good to be noticed. So like, how did Paul like develop this community? He was in Ephesus for 3 years. Was it just like he had a lot of tickle fights? He's like, hey guys, tickle fight, woo, all right? Thank God for you, Paul, right? Was it like slumber parties? Was it just like all the time, just this constant party with glow sticks, right? Because I would think that a lot of us, if you were saying, hey, how do we have like a really great community? A lot of us would say, hey, we should have fun. We should have at least like more fun, because fun is something we all like. Big fan of fun. And so the more fun we have, well, then we're going to be like better friends, and we're going to have a better community, and then we can just like look at each other and say, thank God for you, and I think about you, and I think about you, right? But it's really not how it works. Like the fun parts of any relationship, if it is in a relationship with your partner, if it's a relationship like with your family or your siblings or your coworkers, it's hard. Fun is good, but it's really hard. Think about the people who have shaped you the most. Who are the people who have influenced you the most? Shameless plug. Next weekend, we have our You Make a Difference Sunday, where we invite you to reach out to the people who have made a difference in your life and just say, hey, notice you, and thank you. And then we're going to like celebrate them. Okay, back to the, away from the shameless plug. So who are the people that have most influenced you in your life? Maybe it was your parent. Maybe it was a mentor or a coach. Maybe it's your partner. Maybe it's your circle of friends. For me, there's a lot of people. But I can tell you, like with my circle of friends that have influenced and shaped me over the last, how long have I been married? More than 12 years of my life, right? Has been, part of it has been fun. Going on vacation with my friends. That's like a little part of what's shaped me. You know what's the most influential thing that they've done? Is being at the table with me and looking at me and saying, you can do better, Chris. I know you're a better father than this. You can spend your money in a lot healthier ways. The way that you use your energy, Chris, can go to better places. It's sitting down at the table and saying, where in the world did you come up with that idea? Right? Where did you form that ethic? Sitting at the table, crying with me. Sitting at the table, like, angry and just feeling a lot of rage with me. Sitting at the table, just being bored with me. Sitting at the table thinking, when is Chris going to leave? I'd really like to go to bed, right? Like, it's in that kind of life. It's in that kind of community. When you show up to the table, then you can reap the benefits of a community. It's not just about fun. It's so easy. We like to think we have to have pleasure. We have to have like all these like ha 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 moments. But a real vibrant, healthy community is when you can show up at the table with a radically inclusive group of love and people who are indifferent, and you can stay at the table. I thank God that I have people in my life who are willing to be at the table with me, even when we disagree, even when we have no idea and I'm a hot mess. They still show up. But this isn't easy. This is not easy. It's way easier at times just to bail, right? Like if you're in a circle of friends, it's easier to be like, this is a little weird. I'm out of here. I'm going to find a new circle of friends. Like you have to have some sort of commitment. If you want to grow, if you want to have a community that says the thank God community, you have to have some level of commitment. No matter what you do or where you go in life, commitment is the key to flourishing. Right? Like, has anyone ever said, today I start my diet. Today is the whole, I had a friend, they're like, we're starting the whole 30 today. It's a diet, right? And I showed up, I'm like, hey, what are you guys making? They're like, oh, we started the whole 30. I'm like, oh man, I really want some pizza. Like, yeah, me too, we're done. Right? Right? It's like, if you don't have a commitment to stick with it for more than 4 hours, right? And it's just like one average Jack's pizza is going to throw you off, right? You're probably not that committed. You're not going to reap the benefits from it. If you're committed in your marriage, right? You have to be radically committed. And what happens is, if it's in our spirituality, our health, or our friendships, being committed can be really messy. And I love using this example. There's one thing, and I'll use the word healthy people, right? Because there is unhealthy people who don't do this, which is heartbreaking. But one place where healthy people have unwavering commitment is Vikings fans, right? That was a joke. No, we're horrible. Where we do it, healthy people, is parents. Parents are radically committed to their kids. And it's not because, yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, you're welcome, kid, right? So, and it's not because parenting is fun. The parents aren't radically committed to kids because they're like, this is so much fun, right? Like being able to sit down for 10 minutes just to like have silence, and all of a sudden you have like that eerie, if you're a parent here, have you ever heard like the eerie silence? All of a sudden your kids aren't doing something and you're like, what's going on? And you get really suspicious and you walk into the bathroom and there's like feces all over the wall and the kids are like still with like, hey, look, mom, we're painting, right? No parent ever goes, wow, this is so fun. Oh, yes, just like I dreamed, right? No. When you have a teenager and at the table, the teenager goes just out of nowhere, goes, you don't even know me, dad, right? And then runs down, right? You don't sit at the table like, this is so fun. It's not. But why? Why do you stay at the table with your kids? Why are you willing to give the best of yourself and give a lot of money, right? A lot of money and time and energy. And staying, even you, I imagine, I don't have adult kids. Imagine it doesn't change a lot when you have adult kids. You still worry, right? Why? Because you love them. And you were, even if they looked at you and said, I hate you, I want nothing to do with you, I would bet a lot of money that most of you here would still say, it's fine that you feel that way, but I love you. And tomorrow, I'll show up and I'll give you my best. What if we had that kind of commitment What if that, we had that kind of commitment, even in our friendships? And now I'm not equating like you have to treat your friends like your kids, like, all right, time to put you down. What are you doing? All right. But I'm saying, what if you showed up with that kind of commitment, that kind of energy, that kind of saying, no matter what, I'm invested. What if we did that in our church? Like, I am so thankful for the people in Cloquet Vineyard, the people listening to this podcast. You guys are very, very committed. But if you want to grow in your spirituality, we have to be willing to, and this is what Paul did. Paul went to Ephesus for 3 years, and he gave his life. He gave his life. So you have to be willing to show up and be at the table even when it's hard, and you have to be committed. You have to say, I'm in this with you, friends. I'm in this with you, my love. I'm in this with you, to my family, to my kids, and I'm in this with you to this church. But here's the part. How you get to the thank God community, right? And I know what you're thinking, wow, this is really making sense to the nudge. Don't worry, it's coming, right? The nudge is coming. So, now I got lost. Okay, so, right? To be at the table, and you have to be also, the other key ingredient is you have to be vulnerable. And I know what you're thinking, yeah, I love that word. I love being, says no one ever, right? Like being, like on the front end of being vulnerable, walking in either to like a small group. So some of you are like, that is the most asinine thing you could do. Is like, I'm gonna show up at a stranger's house? I don't know what it smells like. What kind of coffee are they serving? All right, you're like, where do I sit? Am I on the floor? Are shoes on or off? Right? Is anyone else like that? You think through. Yeah, that's me as well. It's like, hey, come on over. I'm like, okay, do I wear a tie? You don't know, so you feel. But here's the thing: small groups have helped Nikki and I flourish. Meeting friends, having a place to be honest and real. I love small group. You have to be vulnerable to do that. If you want to grow, if you want to have that kind of community, you have to be vulnerable. And it's messy when you're vulnerable. If you've never read the book called Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, she is an amazing human and a great author. And you can even watch some of her stuff, TED Talks on YouTube. They are so incredibly good. And she calls this, if you want to be vulnerable, she talks about, it's almost like you're undressing in front of a bunch of strangers. Like, oh, sign me up, right? Actually, maybe some of you are like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, no, don't do that, all right? But what she calls it is, if you want to get to the thank God communities and you're at the table and you have to bring yourself, you have to be honest, she calls, you just have to embrace the suck, all right? You got to embrace the suck. It's like the whole idea of, I tell people often, you can do hard things. Because if you're willing to be at the table, if you're willing to be committed and show up, and you're willing to be vulnerable, and even when it's messy, and you decide you're not going to bail, you're not going to run. Because you know what happens when I see people run? From marriages, sadly, from friendships, from spiritual communities? It's usually that's rooted all about, I'm not getting what I need. And there's times that is a very healthy thing. Okay, so I'm not saying, well, I better just stay in this broken marriage Chris told me to, all right? Embrace the suck. No. But what happens is when you leave for those things, it's like a cycle that just repeats itself over and over. Like the things, like I can tell you right now, you are going at some point, it's your first time here, thank you for coming. I'm sorry to tell you that I'm probably going to offend you at some point. The people around you, you might think, oh, we all believe all the same exact theological things. Right? We all agree on everything political. You're looking around like, look at, we are all bleeding heart conservatives. We are all bleeding heart liberals, wherever you're at, right? You're like, we all showed up in the same room. I'm sorry, like, no, not at all. Like, there's people right next to you. Like, I'm looking at some of you right now, especially you, all right? That, all right? That they feel and believe and think very differently than you. They vote very differently than you. And guess what? It's a beautiful thing. We can have a radically inclusive community because we have a radically inclusive God who deeply loves. If you're willing to stick in it and say, I'm here, and I'm going to get disrupted in some of the things I believe, I'm going to get disrupted in some of the things I think, and I want to grow. When you do that, that's the kind of community where we can have the nudge. Now, oh, that was just my intro, all right? You're welcome. Why this is a well-rounded, like you be a well-rounded Jesus-looking person when you're willing to nudge. And I changed the word, and because the other word we use is a very churchy word. You guys ever heard of like Christianese? Right? It's like words we use like you're baptized in the blood of the Lamb. If you're a new person, you'd be like, nope, no thanks. You're like, I'm out of here, right? The word, and some of the words, like if I say the word evangelism, some of you might have heard that word from being in a spiritual community for a while. You have your own formation of that experience. And either you're like, yeah, I like that. Or a lot of you are like, evangelism, like, no. I'm not going to go out and hand pamphlets to people and bang them around, right? So that's why I use the word nudge. And the churchy word that we use in here is called discipleship. Discipleship. And maybe you hear that word and you get uncomfortable, like, because maybe you hear the word discipleship and you feel like, because that's what Paul's doing. Paul goes around and disciples people. What discipleship really means, the disciple just means you're a student, that you're learning. But in spiritual communities, we can use discipleship as like there's this system and there's this program and you have to go through all these things and you have to arrive at this point and think this, believe this, act like this. And if you do that, then you're winning. And so you're like, a lot of people are like, no, I'll just drink coffee. I'm really comfortable in my seat. But really what it looks like, what Paul's doing here, it's all about nudging. Because nudging, if you're at the table and you're willing to be vulnerable, all those things are saying, then we can look around the table and we can just redirect. We can nudge people, say, hey, like I said, people have done that to me. They've nudged me in what I believe to be true. They've nudged me and moved me in how I treat my wife and the way I talk about it. They've nudged me in how I treat my body and my health. I'm really glad that my friends have done that with me. So, Chris, is this really the best that you can be with your body? No one, it's not like when you look for friends, like, hey, will you like tell me if I'm doing some unhealthy things? Because I love that. No, it's hard. But when we can actually like lean into people, because what Paul does, why does Paul do this? Why is Paul discipling people? Or I'll go back to, why is Paul nudging people? Is it because he wants to let everyone know how holy he is? He's like, all right, gather around, all you Ephesians. Come on, let's go. I'm a big deal. I'm Paul. I wrote most New Testament. You don't know that because it's later in the future. But I'm really smart, and so buckle up because there are going to be some truth bombs coming your way. Right? No, that's not why he does it. He's not doing it for power. Sometimes, especially in spiritual communities, people say, well, I can't teach that class. I can't talk about that, like, because, no, I'm not smart enough. I don't have all the right answers. I can't pray. I get that all the time. I can't pray. I'm not like one of those professional prayers, right? Like the people up front. Like, Paul does this not out of power. He does it out of love. That people who show up at the table, the people who are committed, who are vulnerable, the people who are willing to help nudge, they do it out of a deep, radically inclusive love. And I can tell you, at this table that Paul's talking at this church, they wouldn't be meeting at a place like this. They would have been meeting in someone's home. And at that table would have been people who were radically different from one another, from someone who was a slave and possibly someone who owned slaves, of eunuchs who were there, who were kind of like the outcasts, and then people who owned their own property. There would have been people who've traveled long ways to come. There would have been people from other towns who are just transitioning. There would have been people who've been considered terrorists. They're all showing up at the same table, and Paul's saying, thank God for you. Thank God for you. Paul did it because he deeply loved humans, and he wanted to see them flourish. Enough that Paul, in his letters, over and over, and if you read it through, Paul's trying to have power and tell them what to do and like, shape up, perform. If Paul's just doing it so like, I want to get you all these boxes checked so you can get into heaven someday, then that's how you're going to read the Bible, because that's how you see God. And you're looking and say, oh yeah, Paul says cover your head, better cover your head, right? Paul says, wives, submit to your husbands, you better submit to your husbands, wives, right? You're going to look at that as all these directives. But if you take a step back and look through the lens of love, then it's going to be these nudges of saying, what if there's something more? What if there's a different story? And healthy communities, healthy friends, healthy small groups, healthy teachers, healthy engineers, healthy marriages are willing to be at the table and share a different story to help redirect, to help nudge. And I can give you an example of this. Jesus does this all the time. Jesus disciples people, and how does he do it? By yelling at them? Nope. By shaming them? No, not one bit. He does it out of telling stories. Jesus told a lot of stories. And one story, do you guys remember the guy who came and did the pottery? You guys remember pottery guy? Right? He told the same story, the prodigal son. I'm going to tell it, but with a maybe a little different twist. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to give you the flyby. Jesus tells a story of that there's this rich dad, essentially. And really, Jesus telling the story is like the dad in that story is really him. It's the divine. He's got two sons. One son says, hey, dad, hate your guts. Wish you're dead, literally. Give me my money as if you died. Don't ever talk to me again. I don't need you. Peace out. And he runs. And the original audience would have been devastated by this because all your only currency is your family. It's your honor. So yeah, he says, yeah, I don't need you anymore. Goes, parties it up, and of course, squanders it all the way. And so like any good millennial says, I'll live in my parents' basement. So he makes his way back home, all right? That was a cheap shot at millennials. I'm sorry, all right? But it's different because he wasn't like saying, hey, can I have your Netflix password and buy me a couple bag of chips, right? Since he knows that all his honor, all everything, his value and worth was tied up in his dad, and he said, I hate you, wish you're dead, he's walking back, talking to himself, actually, and he's telling himself this story of saying, I'm worthless. Dad, don't even look me in the eyes. Just let me be with the help. I'll sleep out there. All I need is just some food. Just forget about me. And what happens? He's telling him the story. He believes the story. And the dad shows up, sees him, runs at him, and begins instantly to tell his son, there's a different story. He begins to nudge his son, saying, there's a different story. And he does the nudge through like throwing the robe on him, by getting the big fat calf, or whatever that is worth, right? No one ever gets really excited about that part. They're like, robes, rings, fat calf. Woo! You had me at fat calf, right? And he begins to nudge, saying, son, there's a different story. You say you're worthless. You say what you did defines you. And I'm saying there's a radically inclusive love that is filthy, scandalous in generosity. And the son has to decide what story he's going to believe. And really, the point of this parable really isn't about the first son. The real part of the parable is about the second one. The other son, the older son. And the dad actually has to go find him. And outside, there's the party. I love doing that, right? And so there's the music. He's not far away. He's not in some like field, like so far away. He is at the house. He's at the party. Heaven is all around him. Because heaven looks like what that dad did to that first son. I'm worthless. I'm a horrible person, full of shame, guilt. I don't deserve anything. And then Jesus says, welcome home. Jesus says, I'm a radically inclusive, scandalous, loving God, and you get all of it. So heaven is right there, and here's this kid, and he's experiencing nothing but hell. Because hell is that you can't see the reality of what is real. You have this narrative. You have a story. The younger son had a story. This guy has a story, too, and he tells his dad, what in the world are you doing? Who do you think you are? I've done everything right. I'm the real deal. I stayed home. I didn't go and eat with the pigs. I didn't tell you you're a horrible person. I did everything right. He tells his dad essentially three things in this statement. He says, you're a slave driver. Of like, all you do is go in here and just tell me what to do, and I did it. I performed for you. I should be getting something. And actually, you're a cheapskate, dad. Because you won't even give me a skinny goat. You only give me and my friends a skinny goat. And if you go from like fat calf to skinny goat, that would be like not a lot. Thanks for laughing, Dad. I appreciate that. Right? It's like my friends, you won't even give us this bare nothing. Meaning like you're so scarce with your stuff. He accuses them. And the third thing he says, and you are so unfair. You're so unfair. And what does the dad say? The dad essentially says, yeah, I am horribly unfair. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I'm the most unfair person in the world because that's what love looks like. So the son saying all these things, and the dad says, son, everything I have is yours. Everything I have is yours. It always has been. And I'm with you always. What a beautiful response. This is, you've probably heard in my message, this is something that has been haunting me. I've been meditating on a lot. It's just practicing hearing Jesus say, Chris, everything I have is yours. I lack nothing. You lack nothing. And I'm with you always. You see what Jesus is doing here with the people? He's telling the story about the sons that this father is just nudging. He's just redirecting. He's telling them a different story. This dad is at the table in the midst of his son in hell saying, just let's move you towards the life. Let's move you towards the party. Let's move you towards the energy because heaven is all around. And you could be in the midst of heaven and still experience hellish things. And what good friends do, what a good community does, what Jesus is inviting us to over and over and over again is just nudge. Just move. And why? Because friends, I want you to flourish. I want you to have a good and beautiful life. I want you to experience heaven now. It's all around you. Heaven is all around you. A beautiful song is being sung. And we can't do it alone. Some of you are here today, and you feel like, man, I've had so many conversations, friends, in the last 2 years, and I'm going to highlight just men, because we are really bad at this. Women, you are way better at this. But men, I've met with a lot of men saying, I don't know how to make friends. I don't know how to make friends. How do you make friends? Do we need more parties? Do we need more garage nights? Yeah, we do. It's true. That's why we're doing it. I want to help you make friends. Like, we are, as adults, we're so bad at this, but friends, we need to be in community to one another. We have to be at the table with one another. We have to be committed. We have to be vulnerable. We have to be willing to nudge. We have to be willing, because a well-rounded person is willing to speak up and say, heaven is all around you, friends. Let's stand. Let's pray. Just looking at my notes. Young goats, hell, heaven, and party. That was on the screen, wasn't it? Yeah? Yeah, it was. That's great. Let me say this. You are with me always, and everything I have is yours. So Holy Spirit, I pray that you'd come. And God, that's our prayer. Pray for my friends. Even what Nikki prayed earlier, you feel hopeless. And that song we sang of you are good. Pray for my friends who just don't believe that, who are not experiencing that, who are not feeling that. I ask Jesus that you'd come and sit at their table. And you'd begin to nudge. You'd begin to sing that song of, what if there's a different story? To my friends who feel like, I'm not worthy. I don't deserve anything. Everything I have is yours, and I'm with you always. To my friends who feel like I'm doing all the right things as a parent, I'm doing everything right as a wife, I'm doing everything right as a friend, I'm doing everything right as a spiritual person, and it's not working. Everything I have is yours, and I'm with you always. I pray for my friends who need a friend. And I ask that we can be a community that is willing to invest in one another. That we're a community that's willing to show up and be at the table, that we're willing to commit, and we can be there emotionally vulnerable. We can brace the suck when it's hard, because we know on the back end of it, there's flourishing and there's life and there's hope. So we love you, Jesus. Thank you for being so good. Amen. Thank you, friends. Thank you for being in this space with me. I'm going to invite... we call our ministry team. I was going to say our offering team. You're like, you're going to do it again? No. What kind of church is this? If I could have the ministry team, these are people who really, everything I've talked about, they want to be at the table with you. They want to be in that space with you. And if you'd like to experience that flourishing, you'd like to experience that love, that deep love with the divine, man, they would love nothing more than the opportunity to stand with you, like ask you your name and say, what do you want Jesus to do? That's it. It's not a counseling session. They're not going to shame you. They're not going to do the power trip on you. They're going to say, yeah, you're deeply loved. And everything that God has is yours. And I'm right here with you. So if there's something you'd like prayer for, please come up. We're going to worship for a little bit. Go Vikings. And I'll see you guys next Sunday.